Welcome to episode 298 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or are just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Lindsay, Donna, and George. We are also thrilled this week to be joined by our friend and fellow travel agent Danny Janung. Danny owns Har Travel and has decades of experience, decades in the travel industry as an agent and as a cruiser. He also has a small presence on YouTube devoted to all things cruise. And by small, we're talking millions of views here, people. Welcome, Danny.
Yay, thank you so much.
Kermit the Frog, welcome.
Yay. My people.
So cruising has always been one of our favorite forms of travel, but we have seen the cruising industry deal with some enormous challenges during the COVID-19 era. We're all aware of the horror stories from the beginning of pandemic, and cruising worldwide is currently halted. Despite all of that, there are plenty of cruisers who are eager to get back onto the wide open seas and are asking, is this the right time to book? This week, we want to try to cut through some of the uncertainty and help you decide if you're ready to book your next cruise and when. So let's get started. So let's first just talk about the status of cruising now, because I think because we're in America, we think cruising stopped. Nobody's cruising. So can you talk a little bit about that, Danny? Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, in America right now, nobody is cruising. And that part is true. In Europe, we just saw the return of a few of the river cruise ships. And in fact, AMA Waterways is set to set sail pretty soon, right away on the AMA Christina, but only for Europeans. And this is the theme that we've seen to this point, is that you can cruise in Norway right now on Sea Dream Yacht Club. You can cruise in Norway next week on Hurtigruten, but you can't be American or live in America and do that. That's the big clarification. Now, it's not completely over here. What we know is that the CDC has its ban in place until July 24th. We very much believe that they'll extend it because Cruise Lines International Association, the association for all the cruise lines, essentially came together and said, no more cruising until the 15th of September in America. But some of those same cruise lines are planning on operating vessels in Europe. So in America, you can actually hop up to Alaska on UnCruise in early August on American Cruise Lines, because these ships are below the 250 passenger max count that the CDC has actually instituted the ban for. That said, what we're thinking is big ship cruising is probably going to come back at the end of September. That's the hope. I'm booked myself on the Symphony of the Seas and on the 19th of September with the idea of going and showing people what it looks like to travel today. But in Europe, Costa, which is owned by Carnival Corp, a big cruise ship line, MSC, another big cruise ship line, and then Genting, which owns Crystal, for reference, in Hong Kong, the ship's based in Taiwan, all three of them are planning on cruising with big ships in August. So that means big ship cruising is not done. It just means it's been delayed, and right now they're in process of working with the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, putting out the very, very robust multi-layered plans to return to service and what they think that means, and what they're calling their, you know, healthy set sail or healthy return to service.
So the CDC is a U.S. organization, then the WHO is sort of the international. Are these cruise lines that are operating their large ships outside of the North America market, are they following guidelines put out by WHO? Or, yeah, you know, obviously they're not following CDC guidelines. They don't really have to. So what are they using as their marker?
Right. So there's a European body that does a very similar thing. And they actually, I highly encourage anybody who's interested and has the time, they released a 49-page plan this last week that details everything that needs to happen, essentially. But it's really a spaghetti against the wall approach, you know, where it does talk about masks in hallways and boarding and possibly elevators and things like that. But what I like about that is it's very insightful as to the types of things that they're thinking about right now. So you're absolutely correct. Genting, Hong Kong has no, you know, basically no need to follow what the CDC, you know, what they have to do. But that said, all of these companies also have a major presence in the US. And so what we believe is they're not really going to, you know, tell the CDC to go, you know, go away, they're going to look at what happens there too. Now, the big problem with the CDC is that it's not that they've turned down the plans the cruise lines have submitted, they just haven't even replied. And so it was very interesting with this new panel that I'm sure we'll talk about here in a few minutes, of experts, that they've gotten basically a consortium of experts who are lobbyists, who have, you know, power and have the direct access to people in power, along with all of the experts in the medical profession, because what we know is that there is going to be some politics in this. And so never. But for them, it's been easier politically just to say hands off, nothing. And without going the other way and basically saying what you're doing is wrong. So what I think is that the plans that they've released, and Norwegian had a very robust plan, Virgin Voyages just had another very robust plan that they put out, which was the first one I saw that included testing before you board. I don't know if you guys saw that article in Israel, they've come up with some rapid testing, and you know, we don't know if that's going to be enough or that's going to be the right thing. But there's a lot of these pieces of the puzzle that I think the answer is going to be all of the above at the end of it. And so looking internationally may be a better way to do it, because Dream Cruises actually did put their like safe return to service plan out over 2 months ago. So, you know, they always were planning on being the first to come back. And I think the other part is the CDC is sitting back saying, why don't you guys go ahead and start and we'll see what that looks like. And then, you know, make that decision based on, you know, things that we know, because what we know is everything in this pandemic, all the decisions have been made on things that everybody's guessing with or thinks that they know. And just like with masks, we've been proven wrong over and over again.
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, you mentioned UnCruise, American Cruise Line are sailing U.S., mm-hmm. Canada, with fewer people on board. But before our audience of three actually just jumps on board and says, that's what I want to do, I want to book that, that's a much higher price point, correct? So yep. That's not like your mass. If you're normally a mass market cruiser, that's a big price jump for that level of service and the smaller ship. But I'm assuming that these ships are going out with some guidelines in place as well, just because they're less than 250 people. They're not like, yeah, we're great, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to have problems.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you're absolutely correct. The big part that I always encourage people to think about though is excursions in Alaska are very expensive, and they include all of them virtually, mm-hmm. in almost every case. And, you know, the other part that's I would pay for right now is there's millions of tourists not in Alaska right now. So they're going to get an unprecedented experience of when you're in these fjords and these glaciers, you're going to be the only one there as a 100 passenger ship that's probably only going to have 50 to 70 passengers on board. What we saw with American Cruise Lines is they said, because they're brand new ships, they all have independent HVAC systems. It's all fresh air coming in. We're expecting the cruise lines, they've already said they're going to install medical grade HEPA filtration. So we're expecting the same thing there as well as on the large cruise ships. So I try to pose it as highly inclusive travel, but that also goes with the Mississippi. They expect to return to service. American Queen Steamboat Company and American Cruise Lines expect to be back on the Mississippi. And for those who are ready to travel domestically, this makes a lot of sense, because you never leave the side of land. Like, you're legitimately looking at land at all times, which is such a great part of the river cruise experience, because you're experiencing with the people that, you know, I love watching people, you know, walking their dogs or fishing or tending to their garden. You have that insight, like you're part of it. And then also in the Pacific Northwest, the San Juan Islands are some phenomenal cruising, and also river cruising between Portland, Oregon and Lewiston, Idaho. Clarkson, Lewis Clark, I get him. You know, I was a history teacher, I get all mixed up. There's going to be a lot of different things that are put in there. So upgraded filtration, we know for sure there's going to be temperature checks. There's going to be reduced capacity. We expect the big ships from Royal to probably sail 40 to 50% occupancy to start to help allow for social distancing, which has to happen. And just adjustments on board. I'm not going to lie, everything I've seen to this point, I feel will improve the cruise experience.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I mean, for me, less people, woohoo, great. Mm-hmm. More space for me, more time for me. You know, I buffets are great, but to be perfectly honest with you, humans are disgusting. And so I've got a 4-year-old. I can speak for her, for sure. We go to Disney and she touches everything and then touches my face. So, I mean, mm-hmm. we know that in general. And so for me, not sharing tongs, I even saw a proposal from Royal Caribbean that talked about giving you your own tongs or having them, you know, that you only you utilize, or, you know, there's a lot of things are going to happen, but right now it's all speculation, but with this Blue Ribbon panel being kind of, you know, advised upon and spoken from and to, I have a lot of, I'm really, really excited because I think this is the moment that moves it to cruising today being a reality versus just something that's, possibility.
Well, so Danny, they've canceled most everything through September 15th right now in the U.S. Do you expect that they are going to extend that, or are they going to actually start implementing some of these plans and slowly ease back into the market?
So, as of right now, there is no plan to return officially. That's the important, headline here, is that until the cruise lines come out and say the plan that we, put together with this panel has now been approved by the CDC and we will be launching with X, Y, and Z ship on this date, that's the signal that we're going to get to know that cruising is going to return. Carnival kind of did that and Arnold Donald put his foot in his mouth and basically stepped it back and said, we got really excited and thought it was going to happen and it didn't. One important thing to note is that Royal Brands goes through the 15th of September, whereas Carnival Corp and Norwegian both are extended through the end of October. So what I expect is a small return to service from Royal, probably Harmony of the Seas, Symphony of the Seas, some of their newer, bigger ships, because one very, very interesting thing, one of the things that's been, I'm just a nerd with anything cruise related, it's been very interesting to see that they said that they can turn a profit on those new big ships at 30% occupancy. That's a bit mind-boggling. So, think mm-hmm. about the metrics and the financials of cruising, but on older ships, it goes to 50, 60, 70% occupancy, which would probably put those out of the social distancing guidelines. And so what we've already seen is, Royal Caribbean, what happens with old ships is most of the time they sell them to other brands or they form their own brands in Europe or other markets that are not nearly as sensitive to newness of ship. When they're more focused on cost only, they can use these old ships, pack them to the gills, and still get a great value. But what we saw is three of my all-time favorite ships that Royal Caribbean had transferred to Pullman Tour. Pullman Tour went belly up because they have no ability to cruise at 60, 50%, and they're scrapping the ships rather than selling them. And so the Monarch of the Seas, which I've been on 10 times. She was out here in LA. I shed a bit of a little tear there because one of the things I've been really excited about is documenting the ships I've been on for my daughter, later on. And so I've seen a handful of my favorite ships get going to be dismantled. But what that means is we're going to have new ships, and that's what they're going to return with anyways, because they can easily update them much quicker and financially at a reasonable rate to bring ships back right away.
I mean, the technology, like the filters, it's much easier to put that into a new build than it is to retrofit. Yep. So, Sandy?
So, you mentioned a couple times this joint committee. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because that's brand new news. I mean, by the time the podcast comes out, it won't be brand new news, but...
Right. Well, the first thing is that it's Royal Caribbean playing well with Norwegian. And, these are two tough competitors that really, in the big ship industry, they fight it out for suites. Because these two cruise lines have the biggest suites, the most suites, phenomenal suites and really incredible products with the Haven and then Royal Star and Sky Class. But to me, the big news is that they're working together. They teamed up and they have selected what they're calling a blue ribbon panel. And it's led by Governor Michael Leavitt who's former governor of Utah, but he used to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services under George W. Bush. And so one, that's a double piece, right? That's a lobbying person, somebody who knows the right people. And also on the other side, he does have a lot of expertise in the medical field and was the director of the department that's going to have to approve the return to service. The other one is Dr. Scott Gottlieb, who is the former head of the U.S. FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and you've probably seen him all over the news. He's been a talking head on a lot.
Yeah, he's been on everything, lots of programs.
Yes. And same thing, he knows the right people, he knows the buttons to push, and then when you look at the rest of these panelists, it's a very diverse group from all over the United States. Most of them are MDs. In fact, virtually all of them are MDs. Some of them are, PhHDs, and then you also have, Global Marine Operations from Royal and Vessel Operations, which is the same position from Norwegian. So what they've done is they've taken the people who are in charge of the ships themselves, the ones who are going to actually retrofit and the ones that are going to push them out, and they've partnered them up with half a dozen to 10 people. They said they're still looking for one or two more for very specifics, but these people all answer a very specific question. So what is what do temperature checks look like and what is the value of that, right? What does testing look like? What is the value of that? You know, people who are food experts. And what's been really interesting is the way that they approached it was basically saying anything and everything that we discover, anything that we, any conclusions that we come to, this is for everybody. We're going to put it out and this is going to apply to the restaurant industry. This is going to apply to the theme park industry. This is going to apply to everybody. And to me, that's such a, you know, that's not the way big businesses usually do things when you're with their competitors, because it's really, I mean, Royal Caribbean and Norwegian really duke it out for, you know, for those specific guests. And so to me, this is what needed to happen. And this is the first of two or three steps that I expect that will truly lead to the return to cruising. Because the other piece of it is they also have there's some on there that are also financial experts. And so the explaining to the government the position of cruising and how much money they bring into local, you know, you think about South Florida, right? They're getting crushed right now, but it's more than just the cruise ships. It's the hotels that we would, you know, I've canceled 7 or 8 hotel reservations in South Florida for myself, airlines who are missing out, all the different levels of the supply chain. So people who supply all the shrimp that I'm going to destroy the moment I get back on board, and my soft serve ice cream that, you know, I'm going to eat gallons of the second I get back there, you know, to the Uber drivers, and shout out to Uber Joe, the best Uber driver in all of South Florida, different story. But all of these people, letting them know, hey, this is what it looks like to safely return. They also now, on top of it, I've seen some references to the fact that Universal being open has given them a really good insight into what it looks like to put a bunch of people together in the time of the COVID pandemic.
And that's actually going pretty well, which is also, like, that's super promising. Everybody's like, oh, we can't have crowds. Well, you're right, unless we do it correctly. And it seems to be going pretty well. And Disney's still on slate to open up. So with that, I'm kind of curious about talking about sort of for people who are wondering, okay, but what about money? Here are these cruise lines who are not sailing. Where are they getting their money? How are they surviving? How are they not bankrupt? What's going on behind the scenes? Do you have any insight on that you can share?
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing I will say is I'm not a stock market expert, and I don't always completely understand the funding and pieces of the puzzle there. I've tried to learn it, but essentially the easy way to look at it is they've sold more stock and they basically mortgaged their ships. And what's interesting the way they do that is when a cruise ship is built, it's almost always financed by the local country in which it was built, because building cruise ships is a huge benefit to the local economy. So the biggest shipyards are in Finland, France, and Italy. And in all the cases, what, you know, like NCL Holdings, which also owns, in addition to Norwegian Cruise Lines, owns Oceania and Regent, they actually went to the Italian government and they went to the local shipyards, and they think of it as refinancing the ships. They got a 1-year holiday, so they don't have to pay the payments for a year. And this basically happened across the entire industry. And this is not being paid for by the shipyard per se, but by the financial institution that the government uses to finance these ships. So that's one way that they've done it, is basically refinanced and pushed back the first payment, which would be really nice to do right now. There's some good rates out there, by the way. Insane interest rates out there right now. So that's one way. The other way is to sell more stock, which we've seen all three companies basically do. And they're publicly traded companies. So that's money that they sell and it comes back into the books and it goes to use to burn, right? That's what they're happening right now, is a crazy burn rate. And then the other one is essentially taking out loans. And they've all essentially said the same thing, using all three of those different types of tools that they have at their disposal. They can go between 12 and 18 months without sailing with any passenger at all and still be in business. Now, that's going to destroy them if they have to go 18 months. But the other weird kind of unique piece to the puzzle of this is, what are the creditors going to do? Are they going to repossess these ships? Because they really don't have anywhere near the value to another cruise line. Or, I mean, I guess you could start a new cruise line. Right. But I mean, theoretically, the only way to do it is the way Oceania started, which was to buy ships from Renaissance that went belly up. And so their first three ships, now they have 4 R-class ships. Same thing with Azamara. They started with those 2 older ships. So I guess there could be a market. But once again, those ships that are older are not the ones that are going to sail now and make as much money for the cruise line. So to me, you know, one, I tell all my clients, and I'm sure you guys do as well, is, you know, you have to choose to leave your money with the cruise line. You know, nobody's going to force you to do it. You decide, do I take a refund? Do I move it forward? What do I do with it? But my advice is, if you don't feel confident in the cruise line, refund the money. I mean, that's the smart thing to do. Not everybody can, not every situation. But the flip side is, they have record sales for next year right now. Like, it's insane. I have a client that I just got off the phone with who basically said, give me any two-bedroom aqua theater with Royal Caribbean from March through August out of Florida. Nothing. There's absolutely nothing for them to buy, because you had all these people that lifted and shifted. You know, they moved. This is a term that Royal Caribbean's used to basically protect your price and move it forward a year. But in addition to that, Norwegian was really, really aggressive with huge discounts early on. Royal as well, too. Now, both Norwegian and Royal have said, if you're going to buy, you better buy in the next couple of weeks, because we're going to raise prices, because they can. And I talk to people all the time, and they say, you're insane. Like, nobody's going to go on a cruise. And I spend my day talking to people all day that are going to go on a cruise, and they want to go on a cruise. And these you know, spots are selling for sure.
Hey, I booked them for this next summer.
Yeah, there's people out there that just love cruising that are ready. They're chomping at the bit to go back, and they know they'll be back. So,
What I hear from them constantly is, compared to going on an airplane, compared to going to Las Vegas, compared to going to Disney or Universal, this feels a lot safer to them. You know, the idea that you're probably going to get a COVID test, and then you may get a second one when you get there. I think that's highly likely to happen. And then constant temperature checks and very specific controlled environment where you can, you know, enforce these things in a way that you can't otherwise. And so, you know, some people won't be able to travel for a very long time, just in general, because of their health or their job or life. I mean, that's what's going to happen. But people who can and understand it, they feel ready to go pretty soon.
And for anybody who's ever been on a cruise ship, I mean, this goes without saying, but this is probably going to be the cleanest, the cleanest cruise that you ever take. And,
I want to go on a cruise because it'll be in my house.
Like, environment and the high-tech systems that they're putting in place, like the electrostatic, I'm not a scientist, whatever that thing is to clean things. I've seen the videos about that. It looks really neat. And so the turnover might take a little longer. You might not be waltzing on right at the crack of, you know, 9 or...
But what they've said with that is they'll stagger it. And so it'll be appointment based with staggered. So part of me feels like that's a better experience than what we have now. If you know, hey, if I show up at 10:30, I'm going to be on by 11. That's a lot better than, you know, hey, show up anytime between 10 and 4 and we'll try to get you there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think people will be a little bit more likely to listen to that, because some cruise lines do stagger, but then they don't enforce. So people still show up, you know, they may not have an appointment till 1. They show up at 10:30 because they want to get on the ship as soon as possible. So I think people might be, to me, honestly, the things that I complain about with cruising, and there's very few things. One of them is lots of people. One of them is buffets. One of them is no pool chairs. And I just see all of my problems, the smoke smell because the filters aren't that good. Like, all of my problems are going away. and the biggest complaint we hear, I think, at least before coronavirus, was norovirus. Oh, cruise ships are just a walking petri dish for norovirus. Well, you know, if you are actually a hygienic human being and you pay attention, I mean, how many times have you cruised, Danny? And how many times have you gotten norovirus?
I've been on over 120. I've never gotten it. And I've been on my last Norwegian cruise was the cruise after they had had it. And so we had the full protocols, and my wife and myself and Cindy, who works with me, all three of us said we have never felt safer, cleaner, or better on a cruise. And that was simply things like, you know, no condiments on the table. They handed them out and cleaned them between each time. They handed you your own silverware, not on the table. They had, and I love the way Oceania does it anyways, but they put cellophane around the outside of the buffet so you can see it. And then you just point to it and say, how about some of that? How about some of that? And all of those things were good. And then they also use that oxidizer that Lindsay was referring to, where basically they're using science, which I don't always understand either, but they're using that to, you know, to use positive and negative ions and, you know, kill viruses, basically withhold the essential oxygen and gases that they need, and they don't harm humans at all. And so I know it's crazy to say, But I truly think that going on a cruise will be a far improved experience over the next 6 months to a year than it ever has been before.
And honestly, it may be the first place we can see live theater. Because I don't know that live theater in theaters is going to come back before cruise line entertainment can come back, honestly.
Yeah. And, you know, it's Broadway until 2021. I'm going to keep Hamilton on loop here.
Thank goodness for LMM.
Was it Broadway HD recently? And mm-hmm. I've been watching a bunch of it. It's super cool. Yeah. Good stuff. But the other thing that I just want to point out, because we talked briefly about it a second ago, but one of the biggest issues with, you know, masks and all of these things in travel is that they haven't been enforced, or they haven't been able to have the power to enforce them. And one of the things that's interesting about a cruise ship that everybody should always know is when you leave land and you get on that boat, the captain is the equivalent of the president, the prime minister, God himself. Whatever the captain says, that's what happens on the ship. And so they will be able to enforce these things, and they will be able to put people, who don't answer or who don't do what they're supposed to. They can quarantine them right in their room. I mean, that's totally legal.
Blank.
Exactly. And there's some that would be nice if they would, because like with norovirus, I mean, the CDC has said that you're, I think, well over 1,000 times more likely to get the norovirus at your local neighborhood bar and grill than you are on a cruise ship. But you don't go spend 7 days or 10 days or 2 weeks with the people at your neighborhood bar and grill. So you all go your separate ways and you're miserable separately. On a cruise ship, to be an outbreak, it's 3%. Like that's what class of crew. And, you know, when you look at it, it's usually, you know, getting it is terrible. Nobody ever wants that. I get it. But this is something that humans are bringing on because they're being gross. And this can happen anywhere. And you're actually less likely and safer being on a cruise. And they travel with their own medical center, which is a massive advantage over every other type of transportation.
I have less trepidation about getting on a cruise, or actually even going to an airport and getting on a plane, than I do about going to my local Costco's and grocery stores, because people are touching everything. Like, just grab the thing you need and move along.
When my daughter has to go, it's like, no, stop, hey! That's pretty much everything. But then I see the other adults doing it, and I want to say the same thing to them.
Yep. Well, and any travel agent worth their salt knows Clea teaches us this, that you're far more likely to get norovirus in a college dorm than on a cruise ship. And I think that totally makes sense.
Or if you've had enough Chardonnay, you won't care. First time,
not taking care of themselves. Mom's not there to tell them to wash their hands, and they think that they can get away with it and they get sick. And this is how we learn lessons, people. So it definitely is something you don't want to experience, but it's brought upon by people being gross, which again is why the demise of the buffet is totally fine by me. I will take a cafeteria over a buffet anytime. And it's basically the same thing. I'm still not wild about my food sitting out for an indeterminate amount of time. But if that is the only way to serve the right number of people in the amount of time, and as long as I have an alternative where I can go sit down and have somebody bring me a glass of Chardonnay, I'm in a good place.
Two things on that really quick. There was a huge movement in the last year of cruise lines to move to fast casual. And so what you're seeing is like a Loco Fresh on Royal Caribbean. They've got burritos. These are made every 5 minutes, 10 minutes. They've got burritos, quesadillas, you know, all the things that people can grab and go. And same thing with like the Park Cafe where they're making salads and, you know, all of that. So that's been a huge thing. And just one interesting thing, because you mentioned dorms, Governor Leavitt actually talk specifically about the fact that they're going to use their findings to help universities with dorms, because it's a very similar situation when, you know, and more on the crew side than on the passenger side, because crew members are essentially living in dorms. They're usually two, sometimes four in a room with a shared bath. So it's just interesting, because for me, I love the fact that we're going to try to take cruising and make it better and make everything else better around us as well.
Yeah. Amen. So let's talk about the logistics of bringing back cruising, because you talked about that. You already talked about how they're probably only going to bring back certain ships based on the revenue that those ships can generate. But one of the big problems we saw as this happened was cruise ships weren't allowed to put in and let people off, because nobody wanted sick people, because humans are disgusting. So pardon the commentary there. So what's happening with that? Like, are we looking at the cruise lines are ready to go, but such and so island doesn't want them yet, or Italy doesn't want them yet. What do we do? So what's the thought on that?
oddly enough, cruising may launch from Italy after all of this insanity, which is mind-boggling. If you would have told me that, well, I have a few things that I said 3 months ago that would be the opposite of that. So, you know, there's a couple pieces to the puzzle of that. The first one is, you know, more than it, does the country want them, is the country ready for them? And that's the big issue there is, you know, on these islands like in the Bahamas or the U.S. Virgin Islands or Aruba or, you know, any of them, you know, they're going to have much more limited hospital operations and things and talking more about their people than the cruise ship guests that are getting off and coming. And so, you know, one, they've got to be ready for that. Now, I know that this Blue Ribbon panel, along with the cruise lines, they're working on that right now. You know, the Bahamas is ready, and they want it because it's their economies are essentially destroyed. I mean, these countries have, for better or worse, they've doubled down, tripled down, gone all in with cruising as a way to bring in a ton of income and taxes, you know, to support local people with purchases and things like that. So, you know, that's part of it. Now, I know with Crystal, I'm scheduled to go with Crystal in early October. And when I spoke with them, they had said that they had worked with the local islands, all these places, and they got tentative approval before they moved forward with launching those itineraries. But anybody booking a cruise now has to be open and willing to the fact that a stop may be skipped. You know, for me, yeah. I don't care. You know, I really don't care when I'm going to the Caribbean. Part of it is I've been to too many of them or a lot of them.
But I won't care if we ever get off.
And that's 100%. And one of the interesting things that we've floated out there is, what about private islands with the cruise lines or the islands that the cruise lines own, like Castaway Cay or Key, I like to mix that up here and there, you know, or Coco K, which could be Key too, but the executives key, call it K. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Vicky Freed calls it that. I'm going to go. Anyway, no, this could be an alternative because they control everybody who works on there, and the people that work on those islands live on the islands as well too. So they have essentially dormitories, and that's part of it. And so, initially, that could be it. You know, in fact, one of the first cruises I booked on, it visits two private islands, and that's it. It's a 7-day cruise, and there is no stop at any of those islands. And so that could be a way to get around it. But in the long term, it's going to be just what the cruise lines do now, is they negotiate with individual ports and individual countries. And, you know, one of the things that you had referenced, Elizabeth, early on is that, you know, the cruise lines got a lot of really bad media because they were turned away from port. But what are they to do when the country says, we want you to start and finish your cruises here because we get so much money on the air taxes and the port fees, and then your people come in and spend all this money, and then all of a sudden, instead of them doing that in a controlled fashion, even with charter flights, they just cut it off completely and said, we can't handle this, we don't know what it means, you can't come here. And it did lead to some pretty bad, you know, long-term at sea issues. But what I've seen from a lot of the people on those cruise ships is, you know, they understood it, and I've seen all these quotes from people saying, well, yeah, it was terrible, but I go back again because I love it, and now I understand it. And it's really hard to judge an industry on a complete unknown that everybody got wrong. I mean, every single industry got COVID wrong from the beginning. You know, why is a whole different story that we could talk about for hours and hours. But for me, that's the important thing, is that, you know, they are going to work with these countries, but these countries are now begging them to come back because they need that cash flow. They need that money. You know, cruisers spend billions of dollars while they're traveling, and it's not just excursions. It's, you know, tchotchkes and knickknacks, you know, local restaurants, all of these things, and they're hurting. And, you know, these economies in America, you know, we did have, you know, the stimulus and other things that went, whereas, you know, in Europe, one interesting thing and one theory as to why there's been so few cases right now is the fact that they have a social layer of stability. They have socialized medicine, so anybody can go to the doctor and know that they're not going to, it's not going to cost them anything. So just, you know, a totally interesting thing, but that's a cultural aspect, which is why I love to travel, is I learn all of those things while I'm traveling. And I go, oh, you know, it's really interesting for me how people live elsewhere. And that's what we're going to see from this, is just, you know, each one's going to be negotiated separately and independently, and where it ends up, it's going to totally depend on the cruise line executives now having the power saying, well, you know, what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to promise that we're going to have a safe return to service? And NCL put that as their number, you know, one of their top priorities is working with the local governments and having the ability to cancel the stop at any moment.
That's one thing that I found so fascinating about this, is how many people did not realize before this started how many countries relied on tourism as their number one source of income, and how that's, you know, changing going forward, and people are more aware of that. And I think there are people in the U.S. who didn't even realize how much money we as a country bring in from, like you said, from your shrimp being restocked when you're
when you're that's a serious restocking. We need to just put that out there. That's a lot of shrimp.
Yep.
So overall, I mean, we've talked about a lot of things tonight, and it's been great. And I want to sort of encapsulate it for people who, you know, what I'm hearing is, if you're not a cruiser and you're not really interested in cruising, this is probably not the time to become a cruiser. But if you are a cruiser, is this the time to book? And what are the things that you should be thinking about when you're considering booking? We're assuming that you are a cruiser and you enjoy cruising. And I think everybody on this podcast is a cruiser. No, I know we are. We all love it. And I think most of us have one booked. Yeah. Am I correct? Do all of us have one booked?
Yep.
Sandy, you?
Yep.
You do. I have two booked right now.
Yeah. I got 11 booked, but fair enough.
Show off.
You're Danny. Canceled like 8 of them. So.
You're Danny Janung, so that's different. So Danny, what are your takes? Because I think we all agree with you. I already know what your takes are, so I'm just going to ask you to say them aloud.
No, I mean, I really think that if you're interested in cruising, you know, in the next 12 to 18 months, now is the time to book. And even if you're not interested until a little bit further out, like Norwegian has all the way out through 2022. So that's great. Now, one thing that I would focus on is like Royal Caribbean right now, if you book this month, so during the month of July 2020, if you book this month or you've booked in the last 2 or 3 months, you're going to have what's called their Cruise with Confidence Guarantee, which allows you to cancel your cruise up to 48 hours out and basically keep all of it as a future cruise credit. So if you're thinking, hey, I really want that family vacation with the family next summer, but if I'm not ready to go then, I'll go the following summer, this is a great time to book, because one, you're going to take advantage of some pretty historically low rates further out, because the cruise lines want money on the books. So they're making it worth your while. Two, they're going to raise the rates. And if they do have to go down to 50, 60% occupancy, there's going to be space that's just gone. It just disappears and it doesn't come back at all ever again. And the other thing too, is even if you're not a diehard cruiser, check out Virgin Voyages, right? This is meant for people who are not cruisers, quote unquote. And they have a brand new ship that has never been launched. And so their brand new ship that's coming out will have the you know, the best technology, all these things, and they specialize in shorter cruises. But, you know, to me, the theme of it is now, putting hope on the calendar is a very powerful tool. Having something to look forward to is massively important. And what we know right now is the coronavirus pandemic has been more than harming people physically. It has been a mental health, you know, scourge on our nation and on our world. And having the ability to have something to dream about, plan. I have a client that calls me every like 2 or 3 weeks, and she's like, I've got nothing to say. I just wanted to say, I can't wait for my cruise. And I'm really excited about it. And you know, I'm great with that, because for me, that's my connection to her. I know that she's been locked up and she's been, you know, quarantining very, you know, diligently, because she's taking care of an elderly parent. And, you know, for her, this is the moment when I can return to humanity. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to do it. The one important thing to note, though, is that, you know, cruise lines have been pretty good with offering refunds for canceled bookings and things, but it has taken longer than I would like and longer than most had hoped. But once again, this is across the entire world. I'm seeing the same exact thing. So, you know, if money's really tight, keep that in mind. You know, keep that in mind that they're going to keep your money for a little while, but they don't require that you pay in full to get the best rates. You know, you can put a few hundred dollars down and that buys your hope going forward. And then later on, maybe you can't do that. You just turn that into credits and, you know, move it forward to another sailing or another sail date. You know, you guys are experts at mm-hmm. knowing the ins and outs of that from each cruise line. And so, of course, you know, the people, those listening should pay attention to that. But I mean, at the end of the day, having something to dream about. And for me, what I dream about is the ocean outside, and that just makes me happy. And in fact, sometimes I'll just look at old pictures of me on a cruise and close my eyes and pretend that's exactly where I am. And I think that's the powerful takeaway that I would say here is, you know, it's coming back. It's going to come back cleaner, better than ever in that sense. And if you are that person that wants to go, there's no reason not to book right now. There's absolutely none. But if you wait, you may not get what you want, especially if you're one of those cruisers that travels in like a suite or, you know, something along those lines that there's very few of and they're almost gone.
Yeah. Lindsay and Danny and I are all sailing on the October 1st sailing of the Crystal Serenity. And Lindsay and I will be on the Virgin Voyages Scarlet Lady in November 4th. So if you are interested in sailing with somebody you know, in air quotes, you can join us for those. Although the Crystal Cruise is probably getting close to selling out because those prices are crazy.
Sold out already.
Call us as soon as you hear this.
There's balconies and ocean views left, but the suites, but once again, keep in mind with anything, you can waitlist. And waitlisting right now for that thing you want down the line also gives you that buffer of like, maybe I'll think about it when it clears. So if that room or suite that you want's not available next summer or next spring, don't give up on it. Just waitlist it, because that also gives you an extra, amount of time to consider your decision. And then once the waitlist clears, they ask you if you want it. And if you don't, you have no obligation to take it.
Yep. And since I'm waiting for my passport to come back, my October 1st room may clear out. I got a nice little suite, so it might be worth waitlisting that one. I'm a little stressed out about that. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on outlandertravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. A huge thanks to Danny Janung for joining us this week. On behalf of Donna, Sandy, George, Lindsay, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.